This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide from Syngenta, the first dicamba herbicide premix, which offers both contact control to manage the weeds you see and residual control to help protect against the weeds you don't see yet. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.
And the Fed continues to destroy the fiat currency system.
From Bubba Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This afternoon, we'll talk with Andrew Hecht. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now filling in for Chip, look out, from BubbaTrading.com, Todd Bubba Horwitz.
What's up, Davis? And you are better looking, too. You are a handsome young man, I will tell you that.
Well, that's what I keep preaching. You know, they say you keep telling a lie enough times, people will eventually think it's true. Day after
That's
day,
right.
I get the opportunity to spread my own propaganda. Why not? I've got the soapbox.
Hey, you know, listen, you know, you're on top of it. You and Jerome Powell are both full of crap. There you go.
Well, now, in looking ahead to today's show, I was thinking about words that I could use to sort of prime the pump, you know, get you fired up a little bit in case your energy was dipping a little bit. And
there's
comments
no
from the Federal Reserve tops the list.
whenever those morons speak, there's no need to pump me up, baby. I'm so pissed off as it is. It's amazing what they're doing. And what's more amazing is what we're doing. We're allowing it to happen, which is even worse. But yet they want to take Dumbo and those things off the shelves. What a country. Where's what's his name? They remember the commercial. What a country.
Well,
yeah, got Smirnoff.
There you go. Yeah. Smirnoff. Let's talk about your guest just a little bit. You've brought Andrew Hecht with you. We'll have him in the upcoming segments. Who is this guy?
Andy is he's from the original commercial banking field. He was a top commodities trader for Salomon and Phillips Brothers. And he retired a number of years ago as one of the vice presidents, and traveled the world, not only trading the board commodities, but trading physical. And as he always tells me, he went to places that you wouldn't want to go to. I mean,
right.
With armed guards and the whole thing. So it was he's quite experienced. And now he writes for Seeking Alpha. He's one of the top authors there, as well as Bar Charts. So
he's
very in tune to the market, and he's part of Bubba Trading now as well. So
that's outstanding. Well, we're lucky to have him, and we're absolutely glad to have you back. It's been far too long, Bubba. I love doing these. You know that.
I love being on. I love getting, you know, I get my soapbox. I get to, you know, do my thing for, you know, in between.
Yeah.
So, you know, so what happened today in the markets, my brother?
Well, yeah, in case you haven't encountered a Bubba show before, I'm going to leave the news that really matters up to Bubba to elucidate for us. I'm just going to read the closes, but we are going to talk markets here in the first segment. So it goes a little something like this. July hard red winter wheat, 7.5 cents lower on the day at 6.05. July soft red wheat fell 7.25 to 6.29 3/4. September spring wheat, 5 3/4 lower, 6.39 3/4. Talk a little wheat market for us, Todd.
I'm getting a little concerned, Davis. You know, we've been long wheat for quite a while, but I'm getting a little bit nervous about this pricing structure. You know, it's starting to break down through the bottom end here. You know, we're everything was based on that major support level. Now it's still holding, but it's starting to make me a little bit nervous because the pattern is starting to look like it could break. Now, again, I'm not saying we're going to break yet, but if we don't get a pretty good rally and get some sustainable action here, I would start to be concerned. Now, we are holding, which is a great thing. I mean, in my eyes, I say it's got to hold, you know, 630. If it goes below 630, I think you can kiss it goodnight. And that would be unfortunate because I do really believe that the grains in general are going to have a very big year. And I hate to see it without wheat as well, but it does have some concern for me here, the way that it's been trading lately. Now, on the other side of the coin, wheat was the first to make new highs, so we can look at the bright side.
Okay. Well, on the corn side, May corn futures 3 3/4 cents higher, 5.58. July firmed 3/4 of a cent, 5.42 1/4. December corn closed at 475.5, down 2.25 cents on the day. And I do want to bring this up. USDA reported a daily sale, 1.224 million metric tons sold to China. Following yesterday's announcement, 1.156 million metric tons sold to China. Total sales to China so far this season at 21 million metric tons. Seems like there might be at least a little demand from China out there for corn. What do you got for us in the corn market?
What about the unknown destinations?
We don't know who they are. We don't know who they are.
I mean, look, I
figured it was corn, the Netherlands.
I think corn looks great, Davis. And I think that, you know, we're seeing some backwardation right now with the, you know, if you look out into December, you know, obviously it's far below where we are today. And of course, I think that has a lot to do with the beginning of the opening of the economy. And, you know, remember how we talked forever how the supply was too much and one of the reasons keeping prices low? Well, we alleviated through all that. And, you know, it looks like we might even have some weather events around the country. I think that, you know, look, you're going to see some, I think, much higher prices. I think there's a lot of room to go here in the corn markets. And I do think that, you know, by the time we get to December, they'll be making new highs as well. I think we're in really good shape in the corn market. And I love the way the chart looks. I love the way the action trading it right now. So for me, I think we're looking really solid. And this pattern will turn back the way it should be, which is contango. And I think we're going to get that. And it's going to be because the December's rally will be much bigger and overtake. So I think we're going to be in really good shape.
Soybeans, May bean futures 5.5 cents lower today, 14.17¾. July fell 7¾, 14.06. November bean futures softened to 9.5 cents to close at 12.82¼. But we were down pretty sharply earlier today. So it looked like a fairly decent recovery, although we wound up closing in negative territory in the beans today. Bubba?
Hey, I think beans look even a little bit better than corn. Okay. So, you know, again, when you're, I let the market, the price action dictate what I'm going to do. And to me, they look fantastic. And I think before long, we'll see $15 beans. And again, I'm not going to make some, you know, crazy prediction, but I think we could go significantly higher from there. But I don't see anything that's going to slow these markets down, barring another shutdown. But I think with, you know, all the vaccinations and everything getting done, I can only see brighter skies ahead. And we've been on the blue side of the card and we're staying there. And that's all what I think. So.
Well, May cotton fell 41 points today, 86.51. December cotton gained 7 ticks to 84.33. Let's move on to livestocks quickly here. April live cattle $1.20 higher, 119.40. June cattle up 45, 121.90. April feeders $1.30 higher, 144.62½. Still pretty quiet in the cash cattle market thus far this week, Bubba. But April fat cattle up $1.20 on the day.
Buy them all. But they all look great. Okay. Look, bottom line, we're on the blue side of the card across the board, hogs and cattle. And I can only see much higher prices. In fact, the action in these markets remind me of right before the grains made their big moves up. We're seeing that almost identical play out. So I'm really happy about that.
April lean hogs 82.5 higher, 93.72½, and June hogs firmed 132.5 to close at 102.30. June lean hog contract getting comfortable above 100 there, and I like the looks of that. Todd Bubba Horowitz on his thoughts on the markets. Appreciate that, big fella. He's got his guest, Andrew Hecht, with him today. And when we come back for the next segment, we're going to open the chute and see what happens. You are tuned to AgriTalk. It's a Bubba Day on a Wednesday. Stick around. You're not going to want to miss this one, America.
After much uncertainty around dicamba regulations, the EPA's extended registration of the dicamba herbicide premix, Tavium Plus Vapor Grip technology, is good news for growers. I'm joined today by Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Bobby, why are growers and why should they be so excited to have this tool available to use again next year?
Yeah, weed resistance continues to be one of growers' biggest challenges. That's why we were excited to get the Tavium registration extended to be used as a key solution for soybean and cotton growers. Tavium is the market's first and only dicamba herbicide premix. With a combination of dicamba and S-metolachlor, Tavium offers two effective sites of action for control of key weeds in dicamba-tolerant soybeans and cotton. Tavium provides both contact and residual control, so it controls the weeds growers can see and helps protect against the weeds they don't see yet. By delivering those two effective sites of action and providing both contact and residual control, growers who use Tavium on soybeans will maintain weed control for up to 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone.
Excellent. So what is the most effective way for growers to use Tavium?
Yeah, unfortunately, growers can no longer just rely on a silver bullet. And so Tavium is most effective when used as part of a season-long weed management program combined with sound stewardship practices. We recommend starting the season off strong with a good pre-emergent herbicide, such as Boundary, Broadax, or Prefix from Syngenta, and then following up with an early post-emergent application of Tavium.
Excellent. All right, Bobby, thank you. That was Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, telling us why the dicamba herbicide premix, Tavium, will be a valuable tool in 2021. Don't let time run out on your herbicide management plan. Visit SyngentaUS.com/Tavium or speak with your Syngenta retailer to learn more. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip technology is a restricted-use pesticide. Vapor Grip is used under license from Monsanto Technology, LLC.
If the world is your oyster, we've got pearls of wisdom on AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Davis Michelson behind the medium-sized green leafy microphone because we've got Todd Bubba Horowitz guest hosting for Chip Flory today. Chip will be back next week, but we're having some fun this week instead. If you want to join the fun, we would love that. I just asked Bubba straight up, hey, what if people want to call? And he said, do it, baby. Do it, baby. So if you want to give us a call, it's 855-482-5524. That's 855-482-5524. Or you can tweet at us using the hashtag AgriTalk, 855-4TALK-AG. We're pleased to have him. It's been far too long. Bubba, I know you've been busy with the move and everything. You've made your way down to Vegas. And so thank you for carving out some time for us today. You've got a guest for us. So let's open the chute. Turn it over, Bubba. She's yours.
I do have a guest for us. And Davis, as always, you are the man, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson. And my guest today is a gentleman by the name of Andrew Hecht. And he's been in the industry trading physical commodities from the board to physical, traveling in places you wouldn't want to go. But he's also my partner now, and he's a writer for Seeking Alpha as well as Bar Chart. Andy Hecht, what's up, brother?
Hello, Bubba. It's a pleasure to be here with you today.
It's a perfect day, too, because it's a perfect day with our great friend Jerome Powell blowing up the money supply even some more. And what's your take on all this crap that they're pulling right now?
You know, I was just listening to the press conference before I came on the air with you guys. And I look at the Fed meeting today. You know, as another rate cut, basically, the bond market, they seem to be ignoring the bond market, which is going down, which means interest rates are going up, which means that there's inflationary pressures. But he is saying that the inflation is transitory and, you know, they're kind of ignoring it. Basically, they told us not to expect another rate hike until 2023. I mean, some of the members of the committee said maybe 2022. But for as far as the eye can see right now, commodity prices are rising, interest rates are rising, and the bond market's telling the Fed they're wrong.
And of course, you know, you and I have talked about this before, but, you know, there's the old saying, you don't fight the Fed. But the one market that can fight the Fed is the bond market, because it is the biggest market in the world by big multiplication tables. And again, the Fed is, I think, way off base here. And I think we, as the Americans, are getting screwed royally because, you know, this money is not free. This money that they're putting out there is putting us at tremendous risk. Okay, I believe. And, you know, because they're allowing the banks to go wild and lend at ridiculous levels with no real fractional bank of saying that you can only use 10 to 1. I mean, they're loaning out at multiples that are ridiculous. And I think this is going to be the eventual collapse again, which always happens at some point. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, well, I'm looking at two things. You know, as Powell is still speaking, and after the FOMC meeting and I digested what they did, I'm looking at the bond market, which is down a half a big figure right here at 155.11. It traded to a lower than the December 2019 low. So they're saying that what the Fed is saying, pardon my French, they're full of you-know-what. And I'm looking at the dollar. It's down a half a point here. And basically the policies, you know, we had a $1.9 trillion stimulus last week. We have the Fed now dovish. They're soaring, you know, above the stratosphere with the doves. And it's weighing on the value, the purchasing value of our money. And it's all very bullish for commodities, you know.
I agree. And it's, but it really is. It is actually, I would say this is very negative for individuals and for the country. Okay.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. I mean, basically, wages are not keeping up. A lot of people are still unemployed. Wages are not keeping up with costs, and input costs are going up. And, you know, we're going to feel the bite. We're already feeling the bite. I mean, have you filled up your car lately with gasoline? Have you gone to the supermarket to fill up the basket for the week? Have you looked at what's going on with grain prices and meat prices? And it's, you know, the individuals are getting screwed.
I mean,
well, and I just want to throw this in there just really quick. Not that I'm looking for a job. But in my local papers, everywhere I look, there's a help wanted sign. At least in my area, there's never been a better time to be out of work because there's plenty of jobs everywhere. If you're
I'm gonna say something to my young friend Davis Michelson. If you're getting paid to sit home and do nothing, okay, why would you go to work?
Exactly. And how long is that model sustainable?
It's not sustainable at all. It is a sheer recipe for bust. I mean, I think Andy agrees, but we've talked about this many times. This is the worst thing they can possibly do because the free money creates zero. It does not create growth. It does not create jobs. It basically creates debt that taxpayers will get the good benefit and the good fortune of paying for the rest of our lives and your children and their children's lives.
Let me address that with a little story, if I may.
You may.
Back in 1980, I was going to school in London, and I had a friend, a classmate, who had a family in Holland. And we would go to Holland on the weekends. The beer was really good there. So we would go there for the weekend. And what I noticed there was, even during the weekdays, everyone was in the cafes. And I said to my friend, how could everyone, don't people have jobs here? And my friend said to me, oh, you know, the government pays more than many of the jobs that are available. So people choose to kind of sit in the cafes and drink beer and smoke cigarettes rather than go to work because they make more money that way. It feels like we're moving towards that kind of environment here.
And I agree. And I think this is like the first step in universal income. Okay. And you know, my feelings of that and, you know, but that is, you know, this is the environment I think they're generally trying to create, you know, as you and I have talked about many times, the destruction of the fiat currencies globally through all central banks has been disastrous, right? And when you look at this picture, it's what they're really targeting, I think, is a universal currency. You know, I think the experiment was the euro currency that took care of, you know, Europe. And now I think what you're going to see is instead of the United States being the reserve currency, there's going to be a global coin type of thing going forward. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I mean, you know, the value of money, that the central banks are not doing a great job of managing this whole thing. Now, you know, we're sitting here and we're watching the stock market at all-time highs and prices go higher. But I look at it all as a big mirage. It's just telling us that, you know, we look at the dollar against other world currencies. But if we look at all of these fiat currencies that derive their value from the full faith and credit in the countries that print the legal tender, they're all losing value. They're all losing value, which means that purchasing power is going down. So that's why I think that these digital currencies are gaining, you know, so much interest, because they are beyond the reach of the central banks. Now, there's an epic battle that's going to go on because, you know, he or she who controls the purse strings has power. So the governments are not going to give up their control of money supply so quickly. But they're going to have to reach a happy medium here somewhere, because, you know, the trends are you know, they're blatant out there.
I mean, again, this has been going on. I mean, if you want to go back in history, central banks have been destroying the world since the 1600s in England. And of course, you know, when they went to this, you know, in Jekyll Island, and they went to what we have now, I mean, this is a horrible model, because it rewards those who shouldn't be rewarded, and it penalizes those who should be rewarded. And I think
they got a little comfort. It's very interesting. If you look back, you know, 13 years ago during the global financial crisis in 2008, they dug deep in their toolboxes to, quote unquote, stabilize the economy. The central bank slashed interest rates. They started this quantitative easing, which was a new tool. You know, they're not supposed to be able to control interest rates further out along the yield curve, but they kind of stepped outside their box to do that. They did that. It stabilized things a little bit. Now in 2020, last year, they took it to a new level. You know, the Treasury borrowed $3 trillion last May, I think it was. In 2008, from July through September, they borrowed $530 billion, which was the record before. Now we have another $1.9 trillion, a total of almost $5 trillion in the last, you know, couple of months. Basically, you know, it's a vicious cycle here. So I think when you're looking at prices and markets, everything is a bit of a mirage. And, you know, those jobs you mentioned, a lot of jobs out there.
I got to cut you off, brother. We're heading to a hard break. We're going to pick it up where we left off. I've got Todd Bubba Horowitz, Andrew Hecht right here on AgriTalk. Stick around. Time now for the markets that matter most, ripped from pro farmers. First thing today, Aussie farmers are gearing up for wheat planting, and they're encountering trouble securing inputs and equipment. Experts at a Farm Foundation session on climate and carbon markets laid out the possibilities for farmers with the efforts to capture carbon and to provide financial incentive and support for those efforts. President Joe Biden said for the first time yesterday he supports overhauling the filibuster. IEA downplays the prospect of a supercycle in crude oil prices, saying change in work patterns linked to the COVID pandemic and actions by government for low carbon efforts have caused a dramatic downward shift in expectations for oil demand. But prices are surging for raw materials used to build American homes, and U.S. beef exports to Japan topped the maximum, triggering a one-month tariff hike. Pro Farmer members knew this hours ago. Get in on the inside scoop with First Thing Today. Try ProFarmer.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Your pal Davis Michelson here with Todd Bubba Horowitz and his guest Andrew Hecht today on the program. Quick market recap. Everything's fine. Nothing to see here. That's your quick market recap. You can join the conversation if you want to. 855-482-5524. Tweet at us. Use the hashtag AgriTalk, and we'll be sure to get to it right away. Todd, it's back to you, brother.
Call me. I want me and Andy want to talk to you. But anyways, Davis, as always, thank you. And Andy, you know, we have obviously a limited time because you and I could talk for hours on this ridiculous topic, but how do they have the stones to continue to talk about no inflation? I mean, where is there no inflation? I mean, you know, ask any farmer or producer. I mean, they're getting double banged on this whole deal. And how can they continue to make those statements? Please tell me. Help me out there.
It's the formulas that they use are antiquated. I mean, obviously, you know, before the break, what I was going to sum up and say was that, the comment that there's a lot of jobs available, all right, but is correct. But the wages are not keeping up with the prices, and that's a real problem. Right. So there's not wage inflation, but there's certainly, you know, price inflation. But to answer your question, Bubba, it's just the way they measure it. You know, listen, these formulas are an art, not a science, right?
Yeah, I mean, but again, as I've said before, you know, I thought Jerome Powell was the right guy for the job when he got it. But he walked into the ivory tower and he became a moron. He became a no common sense and just let's print away and continue destruction. And of course, it does nothing but create this whole environment. And of course, what would be the next logical step if this continues? What's going to happen, Andy? There's going to be what?
Well, I mean, you know, there's a day of reckoning that's going to come. I mean, so now you have a Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, who's also very, very dovish. So, you know, we're continuing on this path. It's a path that's a very inflationary path. But, you know, the problem is inflation as an economic condition is a rough beast to tame once it takes hold. You know, the Fed is and the Treasury, they're assuming that when they say inflation finally comes back, they'll be able to control it with short-term interest rates. But what happens if they can't, Bubba?
They can't, and you got a higher probability of stagflation, which right. is going to be a much bigger problem. And of course, because no jobs, inflation, you know, again, it is, we've been through this, we've seen this movie before, and it does not have a happy ending. And this is where I always run into problems with this, Andy, is if they would just let, you know, companies like you and I both agree that in 08, they should let the banks that were weak go out of business. They shouldn't have saved them. And the banks are banking on that, pardon the pun, but they're because they know they're going to get bailed out. So why not lend out as much as they can? What do they care? But, there's going to be somewhere to take care of them anyways.
That's capitalism, and we seem to be capitalism is survival of the fittest. We seem to be moving away from that. We're moving more to a socialistic kind of economy, where the government chooses who will survive and who will not. You know, the first, they let Lehman, they let Bear Stearns go under in 2008. They didn't like those financial institutions. They saved AIG and they saved many others that would have gone under. It's a selective kind of situation here. And yeah. You're right, that the banks know that if they get into trouble, next time, government's going to be right there to bail them out.
They got the Fed.
The bottom line is that taxes are going to go up because someone's got to pay for this.
Well, here's my question. Here's my question. If we're on a continuum as far as our economic system goes, are we at the point of just being in sort of what I would call dirty capitalism, or maybe capitalism with a few tweaks, or are we in socialism light territory by now?
You want to go there, Bubba, or you want me to go?
Maybe neither one of you do.
Bubba got bumped. I'm happy
it's
to
all
go
to you.
There.
Let's go.
It depends. You know, that's a great question. And it really depends how Congress changes the voting laws. I think it's this H.R. 1 bill that would change kind of the way people vote in this country. You know, clearly we have two parties here. One is more capitalistic and one is more socialistic. The right now we have a balance of power that's tilting towards the socialistic. If they make changes that kind of cement their ability to win elections for the coming years, the answer is we're going to continue going, you know, floating towards the left.
Mm-hmm. What if I'm a farmer, right? Because that's mostly who's listening today, and they're thinking, well, we got to do something. Somebody's got to do something. What is there to do? What am I going to do?
It's a great question. That's a really
I hate to throw that one in your lap, you know, because I don't know the answer.
As individuals, I mean, all I could say is what I say to people every election time: vote, vote your interests. You got to vote. So, you know, that's important. And certainly, listen, farmers are looking at a lot higher prices this year than last year and over the past years. I mean, we're at the highest prices in 6 years, you know, in corn and soybeans and wheat and other agricultural products. But, hey, the costs, the input costs are going up, too. You know, it's not like such a profit bonanza for them. And, you know, who knows what Mother Nature's going to hand us in the coming months.
Sure. It sounds like we got Bubba back, but I just want to finish this off here and just throw out a thought. It feels like it might be a good time, if you've got some extra cash, to get aggressive paying off some debt right now for the farmers.
Oh, well, absolutely. I think so.
I agree. But again, remember what the whole market structure is based on. What it's based on, being able to borrow cheap. I think the best thing farmers can do is to buy what they need and put the money away and use the capital, but make sure they keep it. Because, again, with interest rates at these levels that are locked in, you know, I'd rather use that capital if I know that I can turn it into more capital versus the actual taking down debt. You know, I'd rather use it to buy some more things that I may need. And that would be the views I take. I mean, I think that is what we're all about right now, is the ability to create more with the ridiculously low interest rates, because the markets are telling you that rates should be much higher, and they should be. But, you know, you want to keep giving money, which is the same reason the stock market continues to get pumped up. But it's also going to pump up the commodity prices as well.
Would you get more specific with that? You would buy things that you need. What do you mean?
Well, I mean, again, I would buy more land if I could. I mean, you know, the land is valuable at these prices, because you've got, you know, most farmers, you know, base their whole net on the land. And I think if I could get more, I would. You know, again, I believe at these type of rates, I wouldn't build an inordinate amount of debt, but I would not be so quick. I would make sure I had liquid, handy cash to do things. But again, at 2.25% or 2%, they're not getting any pressure from the banks either, as they would have in the past. And I think that this is an opportunity to get things that you really need that you might have put off, because you're not going to see, you know, rates like this for, you know, you may see them for a little bit longer, but eventually they're going to go away, and you might as well take advantage of what you can do now, as long as you're not going to get over debt ridden where you can't get out. And then, so it has to be
like farm equipment, like land and farm equipment, and, you know, stuff that's, you know, that's going to have years of use. By the way, the biggest farmland owner in the United States now is Bill Gates. Very interesting.
Is that not scary or what? Okay. To me, that's one of the scariest things that there is that Bill Gates is the biggest landowner. Okay. I don't know about you, but that really scares the stuff out of me.
Why does that scare you? Why is it scary?
Well, you know, he who controls the land controls the food supply and can then controls the economy. And I'm not a huge fan of Bill Gates. I mean, I think he is, you know, as many of those extremely wealthy people are, they believe in socialism, because, you know who does really well under socialistic views are the extremely wealthy.
The oligarchs.
So to me, that becomes a bigger problem. And I don't like bigger problems like that. I think that we've seen a lot of damage to this, and I think it's going to continue. I think the printing presses of the money, because you're really only benefiting the very, very small percentage of people. Okay. And that's you're only benefiting those who have. And the way they give out stimulus checks, like, for example, my kids get stimulus checks. They have no business getting stimulus checks. My mother gets a stimulus check. What is she doing for? You know, this is the most backward system, but it's all creating more chaos, and eventually will lead to doom. And that's what makes me afraid. But it's also allowing the extremely wealthy to accumulate more assets, because they aren't afraid to borrow billions and billions of dollars at these rates, because they know they can turn them in at a higher percentage right away. So yeah, it's easy for them. Yeah.
The stimulus is very much a scattergun approach. And as Bubba said, I agree 100%. I mean, you know, my mom and dad in their 90s don't need stimulus checks. They're getting them. It's crazy to me. But going back to Bill Gates for a minute, one of the things, that's how Bill Gates is buying, yes, for control, but he's also buying because he thinks the prices of farmland is going up. And that goes to the destruction of, you know, fiat currency, the value of fiat currencies. So, you know, accumulating land now is not a bad thing to do. The bottom line is that the demand for food continues to rise every year.
Would you stick around with us for one more segment, Bubba? Is that all right? We got one more segment coming up here on AgriTalk.
I'm going to stay for another hour.
Creating chaos leads to doom, and yet earlier it was said these bankers have been at this since the 1600s. I haven't seen the doom yet. Is this the big one? Let's talk about that on AgriTalk next.
And when it comes to baseball, we have two favorite clubs, the Go-Go White Sox, and whoever plays the Cubs, we're the South Side
Irish. Toorilloor on AgriTalk, everybody. Welcome to St. Paddy's Day. You're not going to need green beer after today's show. We've got Andrew Hecht and, of course, Todd Bubba Horowitz behind the big green leafy microphone. Just one more segment left, so we're going to get right to it. Question from Dave in Iowa, Bubba. He's talking cattle. He says he's ready to move some. A buck and change to break even. What's the smart play here?
Dave, thanks for the question. And in my opinion, I would not sell her. I think we're going a lot higher, but I would also hedge myself, because there's ways to lock in, you know, pretty much right where we are, you know, and you have an opportunity to make a lot more because you will definitely participate in the upside, and all you would be doing is protecting the downside. So I believe that I would be hedging here because I think there's a lot more room to come. And as I said in the opening, I think that the meats are setting up as the grains did right before they exploded higher. And I expect that type of action coming forward. So I would hedge it myself if I were going to look to move, because I don't want to move it. I want to get much higher, which I think we can go much higher. But I do want to protect the downside in case I'm wrong. What do you think?
Creating chaos, leading to doom. Andy, can you talk about money supply and have we done irreparable harm by printing so darn many dollars?
I guess the short answer is yes. I think, look,
oh, no.
we borrowed $530 billion, a record in 2008 from July through September, 13 years ago. Since last May, we've borrowed $4.9 trillion and we'll probably borrow a lot more. I mean, I think that says it all. And it's very easy. The government doesn't have to run the printing presses anymore. All they have to do is press a button, and it creates all this money. And they're addicted to it. It's like a drug addiction. And you know, it's going to be very hard to end that cycle. So I just see money supply growing. I see deficits growing, and I see commodity prices going higher. And I agree with Bubba 100%. You know, hedging cattle here, I would definitely hedge cattle here. But hey, the grilling season in 2021 is going to be a hell of a lot better than it was in 2020, because, Amen. You know, we're building herd immunity, and people they're dying to get together and enjoy each other's company and have that barbecue going this summer.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. Look, as I said, I'm looking for big things going forward, because everything points to some great things happening, you know, in the short term. Now, again, you know, I want to make it clear that this time is not different in markets. There's going to be someday we're going to have another revisit of the 2008 era or the 87 era. You can name whichever one you want. You cannot do what they're doing and expect it will go on forever. It does not work that way. Until you can have some true creation of real product, okay, and some real work, this is just an air bubble. And as Andy likes to tell you, if you just keep expanding the money supply, the wages have no way to keep up with what they're doing, which is what creates more unemployment than employment. What do you say there, brother?
Yeah, I mean that's absolutely clear. And as Bubba always says, you know, when we're doing our podcasts and stuff, it's not a question of if we're going to have a big market correction. It's a question of when. But with the Fed's, you know, continues to pump this air into the economy, you know, it's, you know, there's room for it to continue to expand. As we come, we're going to have a demand surge as we come out of the pandemic. And we're already 100%. Seeing it. We're already seeing it. Listen, you're going to see airfares go up because people are going to travel. You're going to see gasoline prices go up because people are going to go and get in their cars, go back to work and travel. And by the way, as an aside, we've also at the same time with our policies handed the power of pricing back to OPEC with a lot of right. the energy type of policies that are going to go forward. So we're planting the seeds of a period of inflation that could take prices a lot higher. Remember, in bull markets, prices tend to go a lot higher than anyone believes possible. And in bear markets, they go lower than anyone thinks possible. So, you know, follow those trends.
I was trying to avoid the criminals from OPEC because this is one of the worst decisions ever made in my lifetime to go back to OPEC over the artificial that we're harming our environment so badly with taking care of our own. And I think this is really a huge problem going forward because we can already see, I mean, the oil has doubled since the election. And to me, this is going to only get worse. And I'm not looking forward to it. I think it's bad. But as far as people wanting to get together, you know, I took my mom out to dinner the other night. We went by a local shopping mall as we were driving by. There wasn't a parking space in the lot. That's how crowded it was.
You know, Bubba, what they say about payback. You know what they say about payback?
Yes, I can't say the word.
Shale oil squeezed OPEC for the past couple of years. Now payback. OPEC's going to squeeze the American consumer.
Oh, yeah. This is, again, we have no business. This is the day that this the new administration came into place was the day that every bad deal this country's ever made came right back into play. I mean, again, I'm not criticizing one party or the other because in this case, both parties are guilty. They both wanted the other guy out because they liked all those special deals that took care of the lobbyists and all this ridiculous stuff that is really just another tax for the American taxpayer because we're going to pay more taxes. And as you said the other day, you know, Biden said 400,000 was when that new tax was kicking. You said they'll drop to zero. It'll be 40,000. I agree. I think you're going to see much higher taxes. And I think that's going to be probably when the big beatdown will start because they're
right,
not going to
that
cannot
could be a
back.
Real trigger.
Fellas, we're coming to a close here. Andrew Hecht, let's have your final closing thoughts in about 10, 15 seconds, please.
I think follow those trends in markets. Trends are what reflects herd behavior, and that's the path of least resistance of prices. And right now in commodities, in ag commodities, it's higher. So follow those trends. Hedge, but leave yourself the upside because, you know, we can have some quite crazy markets over the coming months.
Fantastic conversation today, Andrew. I appreciate you carving out some time for us. Bubba, we made it. We're still on the air, as far as I know.
We did it again. I didn't get banned, but they still have my special disclaimer and the opinions expressed. Thanks, David.
Thanks to Tavium plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your Syngenta retailer to learn how Tavium can help protect against tough and resistant weeds for 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.